This is the Improved Photography Podcast, episode number 81. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off, use offer code IMPROVE to get 10% off and that free trial. Just when you go to squarespace.com, use offer code IMPROVE. And we thank Squarespace for their support of the Improved Photography Podcast. Hey everybody, and welcome back to the Improved Photography Podcast. I'm glad you're here, that you've joined us. Today I am joined by Darren Meller. Darren, welcome to the podcast.
Hey Jim, it's good to hear from you again. How are things going over in your neck of the woods?
You know, doing okay. The last time we talked, I was gritting my teeth because after we podcasted, I had to go buy a car. I got the job done. The salespeople were worse than I could have imagined. So I'm glad to have a little photography break to get my mind off it.
Phew, gosh, I'm happy that that's behind you.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, a ton is going on at Improved Photography. We've been just swamped. We ran a sale, a buy one, get one for sale on our online classes. Now, most online classes are charging over $200 for kind of offering the same kind of things we are. Because our classes are different in that it's not just the videos. You're actually working directly with me and Darren. When you have questions, you can send in questions to the instructor. You can get feedback on your portfolio. You have a shoot over the weekend and you're like, my photos just didn't turn out right. You can send it to us. And so online classes that are offering that kind of interaction are really expensive. So we've always been way on the low end of the cost of online classes. But my wife told me I was a little bit crazy, but I did it anyway. Decided to do a buy one, get one free sale on classes. And we had a bunch of you take advantage of it. So I'm welcoming many of you into the classes. And I know you're going to love it.
It's an amazing class. I've gone through them myself, and we just get some awesome questions, and the interaction we have between our students, I believe it's second to none. On your portfolio reviews, you get to hear Jim and I talk back to you. Usually, we leave an audio response so you can hear our voices. We keep it personal, and we try to always make sure that we're providing you information that's both helpful and beneficial to help you improve your photography skills.
Yeah, it's pretty cool that people can just, you know, any question you have, you're watching a video and you're just like, you know, what were your camera settings on that? Or how do I get a similar look like that? I've tried this and my shot always turns out blurry. Just email the instructor and you can get an answer. So it's pretty cool. But a ton has been going on outside of the improved photography world. We want to talk about a lot of the things that are happening in the industry and a lot of just the big news that's going on this month. About one time a month, we want to do a show like this where we just kind of talk about what's new, what's interesting in the industry to keep your skills up and so you know what's going on around. Well, Darren, tell us some of the big stuff that you've seen this week.
One thing that I've seen that really caught my eye since I'm a Canon shooter is Canon dropped the prices on 26 of their lenses. And we'll actually include a link of which lenses that they slashed the prices on the Improved Photography show notes here. But 26 of their best lenses have dropped on price. So do you think they're going to replace those, Jim, or do you think they're just trying to drive up some sales?
You know, being that Photokina is coming up, and we've talked about that previously on the podcast, that is like the photo show in the world. That's the one where companies announce new cameras and gear. It's only every other year, and it's like coming right up. And so, yeah, that was my first thought when I saw Canon's cutting 26 lens prices. I thought, whoa, we're about to see a big refresh. But if you look through the list of the different Canon lenses, it becomes pretty clear that these aren't really lenses that they're probably going to be replacing, but just some lenses that they're doing a nice rebate on to kind of kick up sales. I mean, if you look through the list, they have the, you know, the 24-70 f/2.82, the 7200 f/2.8 version 2. I mean, so many of these lenses are not getting replaced. There's just no way some of these lenses are being replaced. I think it's just a price drop. Some of them are fairly modest changes, you know, $200 off a 7200 2.8. That's nice, but but it's so expensive anyway. And some of them are smaller, you know, on a 55 to 250, it's only $50 off. So it's a nice thing if you've been looking at a brand new lens, then now's a good time to buy. But I don't expect that many or maybe any of these lenses are ones that are going to be replaced soon.
I would agree with that as well. And Canon was also in the news too, because on September 2nd, they celebrated their 80th birthday when they announced their first Canon concept that came to life. It was actually called the Quanon. I might be butchering the pronunciation on that, but that was Canon's 80th birthday that we had on September 2nd.
Yeah, 80 years. That's incredible what Canon has done in the industry. What do you think the outlook of Canon looks like? Like, if you had a crystal ball and you were looking to, you know, 10 years from now, do you think Canon and Nikon are going to have the hold on the industry that they still have?
I think they're actually, and this is my personal opinion only, I think they're being a little bit dinosaurish. I know that we kind of were a little bit hard on the mirrorless systems last week, but the mirrorless systems seem to be the popular way to go that everybody has piqued interest in. And I've talked to Canon support reps and they've said to me that they don't really have any plans on going mirrorless because it goes against their values. So maybe that dinosaur thinking might cause them to be extinct in 10 years.
As I look at what Canon and Nikon are doing compared to the technology that we really should be seeing in a $7,000 camera, I do not feel good about their future. I do not feel good because a $700 cell phone has NFC. It's got Wi-Fi that actually works. It has a browser. You can do everything in a cell phone that costs, you know, if you were to buy it off the shelf without a discount, you know, for a contract, about $700 for an iPhone, something, or a, you know, high-end Android phone. And it has a faster processor than our cameras. It's got way better internet and capabilities and sharing and all kinds of stuff. And yet we're paying $7,000 for these cameras plus the lenses. I mean, that's $7,000. Plus, you got to still buy lenses for these high-end cameras. And they just don't have a lot of that sharing capability that I think all photographers realize, hey, you know, we should be having that, right? Like, and so somebody's going to be shaking it up. Somebody's going to be the first one to really double down and start adding that stuff in as they really should be implemented. And then Canon and Nikon are in trouble if it's not them. But the day isn't yet. You know, right now, Canon and Nikon still have a good grip on the industry. We've talked about mirrorless before, and we're going to talk about it again because after our last podcast, one of the listeners kind of mentioned on Facebook, just disagreed with us about our mirrorless, and he was a really nice guy. We've talked with him on email for a little bit about it, and he's actually going to join us on the podcast soon, and we're going to have a little bit of a mirrorless debate, just talk a little bit more, explain why Darren and I both feel the same way that we do about mirrorless right now. But I definitely think changes are coming for Canon, but pretty cool that they've lasted 80 years and they've done incredible things in that time.
They have done some incredible things, and I think that they need to change. Everything's changing. Also, I even heard, as far as sports photography, since we've been focusing a lot on that lately, the NBA just announced they're only going to allow 20 photographers on the baseline, so that's 10 on each side this year. So we're looking at a decrease where it was 24 last year and 40 during the 2010 and 2011 season after some safety concerns for athletes and photographers have come up.
Yeah, so the NBA is the National Basketball Association, for those of you who are in countries that don't like do the basketball thing. But this is interesting, I think. There have been a couple issues where basketball players have been injured or photographers have been injured with collisions because of basketball players. And if you watch a professional basketball game, this is obvious. Like, you know it's going to cause a problem because they put the photographers, I mean, right on the baseline. I mean, just right there, you know, barely any space between the game that's, you know, huge 200-pound guys, 6'10", just flinging themselves all around, and then the guys very heavy, large metal lenses are right there. Like, you know it's going to be a problem. And so this doesn't surprise me at all to reduce the number of people there. You know, it gives the players a little bit of space to run between photographers instead of running through them. I love photography and I, you know, want as many people as possible to be there to be able to shoot, this kind of makes sense to me.
It does make sense. It's, to me, after I read the article completely, I thought to myself, well, when we watch track and field events, we don't see a photographer standing in the middle of the lane where a runner is going to run right into him. So it does make sense to give these athletes some space to flail around and fall, especially after they do, you know, their dunks or even miss the rim.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what's always seemed kind of funny to me is, why do we need that many photographers to cover the event? Why couldn't there be four or five that cover it for everybody? You know, most photographers are there for one media outlet, you know, sometimes a network, but they're shooting for a newspaper, for a TV station, etc. You know, doesn't it seem like we could share anyway and not need that many photographers? I don't know. That's heresy. We shouldn't talk about fewer photographers. But I have always wondered that. Like, why do we need all those guys anyway?
Yeah, it's very, very interesting. And another thing that came up in the news that kind of made me chuckle was there was a Russian photographer. He was described as a tourist. And I asked myself, how far is too far to get the shot? Well, this gentleman decided to climb the cables on the Brooklyn Street Bridge to try to capture some shots with his iPhone. He wasn't carrying a DSLR up there, and I'm not hating on the iPhone by any means, but he climbed the cables to get a shot up there. And he's known for climbing high buildings, but this one costed him a pretty penny. It was about a $5,000 in fine because he put himself in danger to get that shot. So I know that Jim and I like to push ourselves to get certain shots, but you wouldn't see me climbing any cables anytime soon.
Nope. I don't even like Brooklyn, much less the bridge. Just kidding. I'm just messing with you. This is dumb. I mean, why would you climb to the top of a bridge to get a picture? I mean, I can understand getting a drone and flying it up there, you know, whether it's legal or not, and just quick snapping a photo and running off in the car. But like, to put yourself in danger to do that, it is stupid. That's just not worth it. Like you said, I think photographers, way too often, especially landscape photographers, just stay at this, not, and I don't mean safe as in, you know, physically safe, but the easy places to be. And sometimes the best shot is, you know, in the mud, down that hill, you know, it's on in that tree shooting down. It's those interesting places. But this is just really dumb. I've got to think that if he's there and he's shooting with an iPhone, this is really about telling his Facebook friends how stupid he is and not really about the photography. Do you think so?
I agree. And if anything, if he was able to get some shots off, I bet 95% of them would have been selfies.
Yeah, that's true. He doesn't even care about the bridge. He just wants, look, guys, I'm high.
Exactly. Look how high I climbed.
Maybe yeah. In more than one way.
Yeah, yeah.
But speaking of drones, photographers have been talking a lot in the last few weeks about the no drones in national parks rule that has come up in the United States. And many other countries are doing similar things, preventing, you know, DJI Phantoms and other drones or unmanned aerial vehicles from flying around. Personally, I mean, this is a silly rule. It really just does not make sense. If you've used one of these drones, you can see very easily why. One of the major reasons that the Park Service has cited that they don't want drones flying around is because if they had too many, it's noisy and it interrupts the experience for others. Not a chance. When that drone is, you know, 50 feet above you, it is not any more noisy than a bee or a mosquito flying around. I mean, you barely hear it. And if it's a windy day, even lower than that. So when you're flying around, when you first take it off, there's a little bzzz sound, you know, sounds like an angry bee or something. And then it's gone. They're so far away. And so the noise argument is really silly. The safety argument could be a legitimate concern. I do think that we need to be a lot more careful with the way that drones are being used. I saw an article a couple weeks ago of a photographer flying a drone over a concert, you know, a concert that they were hired to shoot the event. And the story was that one of the performers at the concert was throwing drumsticks at the drone until it fell down, you know, just being an idiot. And my thought was, you know, one, that's dumb for the concert guy, but what about this photographer who's flying this, you know, 2 pounds of stuff over a very crowded area with these propellers that are, you know, hard plastic spinning at, you know, 1,000 RPM or more. You know, they're spinning really fast. If that were to fall on the crowd, you know, if you weren't watching your battery and it came down, which has happened to me several times, or you just lost connection in a very busy electrical environment, I mean, you could do real damage in hurting somebody. So I think the only concern we should really be having about the drones is the safety in flying over people. So, you know, if we're at the crowded, you know, Golden Gate or something, and we're going to fly over people, I think we should have rules about not flying over other people, but just none in the national parks because it's disturbing. I've never been disturbed by a drone, and I'm in national parks all the time. I don't see this as being a problem. I think this is them being afraid of technology.
I think new technology always scares people, and I think there also needs to be some training as far as flying, especially over people and over areas where wildlife could be disturbed if, you know, this 2-pound drone came running towards an elk in Rocky Mountain National Park or something along those lines.
Yeah, I think there are reasonable rules that need to be made, you know, like not disturbing the wildlife. But guess what? That's already a rule. They don't need anything specific for drones here. You already can't do that. You can't disturb the wildlife. You know, should there be a rule about flying over other people? I say yes, and I fly them. I love doing it. But I would never, ever fly my drone over people, any people, not just a crowded concert. If there's a group of people, I'm not flying the drone over it. It is too dangerous. If you've flown the drones for any amount of time, you know what goes up will come down, and sometimes unexpectedly. So it's stupid to fly a drone over other people when you're taking pictures. It is dangerous, and I do not think you should do it. So I think there should be regulations on them. But the reason they're making the regulations and the type of regulations, I think, are a little bit nonsensical. I have a buddy who's working on this right now, who's a very serious photographer and wants to shoot in a national park with a drone. And he's been going back and forth for months and months with the Park Service trying to get his permit. He's finally got his permit now. And then the day before the shoot, you know, he was up there with some people and it got canceled, and, you know, on and off and on and off. And so the Park Service is trying to figure this out. I hope they, you know, do this reasonably. They make it easy to get a permit for photographers who can do it and do it responsibly. But I hate seeing those blanket rules that harm photographers across the board.
Exactly. Blanket rules, they just impact too many people. And I just think that they're unfair in a lot of ways because they just try to find a solution before they even find out what the true problem is.
Yeah, that's for sure. Now, another story that's come out this week is iStock is dropping prices pretty dramatically. Their prices are pretty high right now. You know, I started seeing iStock prices at, you know, $10 and $15 for a stock photo that I wanted to buy. And I buy a lot of stock for the website and other sites that I produce. And so I buy a lot of stock. And eventually, I just stopped using iStock because the prices were just, they were really getting up there. Do I think photography is worth it? Yeah, except I know I can get those you know, the micro stock images of just as good of quality from other places like Fotolia, Shutterstock, for a lot less. And so I haven't used iStock except for sporadically, you know, once or twice a year for the last 2 or 3 years because those prices were just too much. And so I'm very interested in seeing this price drop. What do you think, Darren? Is this good news for photographers that they're going to make more sales, or is this bad news that the price is being driven down?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think that I was on the fence of whether or not I wanted to submit some stock photography for passive income, but now that it comes down to it, I'm a little worried that people aren't going to have the volume of sales to make up for the price drop, but it also might give them exposure and help them get some bigger jobs down the road. So I think it's a catch-22.
Yeah, it definitely is. And, you know, my thought is if iStock is changing their pricing, it's not necessarily a bad thing. obviously iStock has put a lot of thought into it. This is a big company. I'm sure they didn't just wake up one morning and say, let's drop our prices. You know, they've obviously thought about this. And if iStock is doing that, they obviously think they're going to make more money by decreasing their prices because they're going to have a wider customer base. And so that's okay with me. I think it's probably a good thing for photographers because if iStock's making more money, so too are the photographers. I didn't see anything about a change in the rates for photographers, so I don't think it'll change there. And so if iStock feels like they're going to be making more money that way, that also means they're going to be paying more in commissions. So I don't think it's a bad thing. I do think iStock needed to make a change to be competitive with other stock agencies that are really starting to take a bite into there. I used to use iStock weekly, and then 2 or 3 years ago I stopped because it was just too much. So I'm sure there are a lot of people like me who are not using it. But what it means for photographers, I don't know. Kind of remains to be seen. It's probably good news.
Exactly. And speaking of news, we do have some more stories that we'll get to, but first we'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Squarespace. Squarespace is an easy way to manage your website, and a lot of our friends like Scott Kelby, Carl Taylor, and Tony Northrup are using this. It's such a powerful tool for being able to update your website easily and on the go. I always found trouble updating my website when I was on the go, and Jim's actually working on a website here, and he said that he's spent about 30 minutes working on the website so far, and it's really getting close to completion. How are things going with that?
Really well. I many of you know I have used every platform out there for creating a photography website. It's kind of been an obsession of mine over the years, trying to find the best way to make a photography portfolio website. One of my major complaints with many of the platforms for a long time is I just didn't feel like the photos were big enough. And now I love that Squarespace has some really slick looking designs that just have big photos, show your work off, and kind of the website itself kind of gets out of the way and really shows off your work. It's incredibly easy to use. And the price is right. I mean, it starts at $8 a month. That's a good deal for getting a nicely designed website. So definitely something to check out.
Excellent. And getting people to your site and getting your photos noticed is key. So make sure to start your trial with Squarespace with no credit card required and start building your website today. When you decide to join Squarespace, make sure to go to squarespace.com and use the offer code IMPROVE to get 10% off your first purchase and show your support for IMPROVE Photography. We thank Squarespace for their support of IMPROVE Photography. Squarespace, a better web starts with your website.
And don't do what I do when you sign up for Squarespace. And yes, I'm a paying customer. When you sign up, don't forget the offer code because I forgot it. How bad is that, right? So don't do what I did. Just remember the offer code. I could have saved 10%. Well, some cool stuff has been going on in the industry that we've talked about, but in every episode, we like to share a doodad, a something going on, a resource that we like. And one that I want to talk a little bit about here is the Really Right Stuff BH40 ball head. It is in my hand right now. So it's fairly undisputed that Really Right Stuff is like they make the ball head. You know, if you look at professional photographers, landscape photographers, a huge, huge percent of them are using Really Right Stuff ball heads. Now I'm making this sound like an ad. It's not. They didn't pay me. They don't even know that I've ordered this. But I've eyeballed this ball head for a long time. I've played with other photographers who have them. They're expensive. If I remember, it's just under $400 for the ball head. You can get a good quality ball head for $100. But the thing is, I go through them a lot. I break ball heads. The last one that I had was a Faisal ball head, and it lasted only about 6 months, and it like self-destructed. It was just in my trunk, and I went to get it out of my trunk, and there was just like pieces laying everywhere. I think just the rattle of the car like just unscrewed the whole thing, and I couldn't find all the pieces. Like, I don't know what happened, but it was just a disaster. I love my Faisal tripod. I would not trade it for anything. It's the it's my dream tripod, but the ball head was not great. And so this really right stuff BH40 is a real engineering beauty. It's easy to clamp on and off as a big release switch, which I like sometimes, especially if I have gloves on. It can be tough to turn those little things, and it's just rock solid. Like, everything is just hard metal. This thing is not going anywhere. And so I'm really excited to have this. We'll see how it stands the test of time. The reports I've heard from many, many photographers that I've shot with are that this is, you know, the creme de la creme. This is the one you want. And so I'm excited to see if it holds up to it. But so far, in playing with it a little bit more here just in my office, it looks awesome. Excited to have it.
And if it lasts you for a while, I might be looking at one too, because I've noticed that even though I believe Manfrotto makes great ball heads and great tripods in from what I've used so far, it's starting to slip, and nothing frustrates me more in the winter when I have to take off my gloves and it's sub-zero temperatures to adjust the tiny little knobs on there to move my shot and recompose it.
Yeah, it is. You know, for a landscape photographer, having a nice ball head makes a big difference just in your comfort of shooting. Like, you know, any ball head's going to give you a nice shot. As long as you have a decent ball head, not a little junker that's going to slip during a long exposure or something like that. You know, they all do the job. They just hold the camera and don't move, right? Like, that's all it needs to do. But just for comfort and ease of use when you're out shooting landscapes, this is pretty nice to have. I'm excited for it. I chose the BH40, which is their mid-size. Now, one thing to know when you're choosing a ball head and a tripod, the same is true, is they're all going to advertise a load capacity. This is the most ridiculous spec ever. It's like they just get to randomly assign a number to their own product. You know, some of them will say that a ball head will have a load capacity of 50 pounds or 75 kilos, you know, just crazy numbers. And others will say, you know, 5 pounds, 10 pounds. And so this BH40, if I remember right, it advertises an 18-pound load capacity. But the load capacity is silly. There is no standard at all for how that number is determined. The manufacturers just say, this can handle 20 pounds. You know, so do not pay attention. Do not make choices on your ball head or tripod by the load capacity. But in their defense, I do like that Really Right Stuff advertises at least a reasonable load capacity. Some of them are just silly. You know, it's a ball head that I would not trust with a 400 millimeter lens, and then it says it handles 75 pounds. It's like, you know, come on, let's at least stay within the realm of reason. So don't worry about load capacities at all, but kudos to Really Right Stuff for advertising a reasonable one.
Awesome. And my dude out of the week is actually the Tamron SP70-200 DIVC lens. And Jim kind of teased this lens a little bit in an article when he reviewed the Canon 70-200 lens, showing that this is a really comparable lens. There have been some reports that this lens has some haloing when you're shooting at f2.8 at 200 millimeters, and some reports of decentering, which can affect the shot and give you halos. But I really haven't seen any issues with this lens. I've actually played around and rented the 70-200 from Canon, and I can't really see a $1,000 difference on here. It's a great alternative for most photographers looking for a lens in this focal range and with a fast aperture. It's weather sealed. It feels like it has a great build to it, and I have no regrets buying this lens. I think it's a great comparable lens when looking at either the Canon L lens, that 70-200 version 2, f2.8, or the Nikon version as well with a Nikkor.
Yeah, I have a hard time every time I write the word 70-200 on the website. I always think, now do I link to the Canon and Nikon version, or do I link to the Tamron version? And it's tough because, you know, if you're a pro photographer and you're shooting weddings every weekend and you're just incredibly picky about everything and your business is making a lot of money, which I think is an important part of this conversation, or if you're a hobbyist who's just ridiculously picky and you have a ton of money to blow, like you just have money in your pocket just burning a hole and you're like, what do I do with this money? Then you should buy the Canon and Nikon 70-200. Is it quote unquote better than the Tamron? Yeah, it is. I think the Nikon and Canon are better 70 to 200s. But until you've shot these lenses, you can't really see just how close of a race this is in terms of build quality, in terms of sharpness. I mean, you really, really have to look at these things through a microscope to see that difference. It is a minor difference in, very minor difference in quality between, you know, the big name brand and the Tamron 70-200. So I guess my opinion of the Tamron 70-200 is 99% of you should be buying the Tamron and not spending $1,000 to get the Canon or Nikon that's only, you know, half of a percent better. But I wouldn't also say that the Tamron is just as good as the Canon or Nikon. There are some nice advantages to the Canon and Nikon versions, but the difference is so small. Save your money and spend $1,000 on you know, go to Costa Rica. I went to Costa Rica this year for $799 on a Groupon deal, including my airfare and my lodging while I was there in pretty nice accommodations for the country. Like, that was $799. Buy a cheaper lens and go on a sweet trip. Like, don't spend $1,000 just for nothing. And I think for most people, that difference is so small that it's just about nothing.
Exactly. And if I was looking at it, I would say if you're making the amount of money that it costs to buy the Nikon or Canon equivalent on each wedding that you're shooting, go ahead and buy it. Otherwise, you can put that $1,000 to a lot better work.
Yeah, and that's an important lesson to learn with business. As your business gets more and more successful, this is one that I've learned the hard way. As your business gets more and more successful, you will automatically start adding levels of complexity because you can. For example, with this podcast, when it was me and Dusty O, who I miss greatly, but I'm very glad to have you, Darren. We had this incredibly complex system that we spent a lot of money investing to make it so that we could, you know, record a live stream so people could watch live and have a recording with multi-camera switching back and forth in a studio and all this kind of stuff and the audio podcast all going on at once. You know, we spent like a month on this project making it awesome. And then it became so complicated that we just weren't producing podcasts as often. It was just so much work to fire up this system. And so an important and hard-learned business lesson that I learned is as your business improves, do not make it more complex. Just keep doing more of what you're doing and what is working. And so the same is true in any photography business. You know, if you're a wedding photographer, I often see people say, you know, well, now I'm shooting, you know, more expensive. I'm getting a lot of money. I'm going to go buy a medium format camera because now it has 80 megapixels and I can do so much better of a job. Wait a minute. Are you really going to do a better job? Is your client really going to even be able to tell that this is the Nikon or Canon versus the Tamron? No, they're not. So, you know, stay within the realm of really reason. I think that most businesses can actually benefit by keeping yourself kind of bootstrapped, you know, staying light, staying agile, not increasing your expenses more than necessary. And that's true with photo gear as it is with anything else.
Yes, keeping it simple is key.
Well, a lot of stuff we talked about in this episode. Darren, thanks for being on the show. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. I've loved recording the podcast recently. It's fun to have somebody to talk with and geek out during the show. And I've heard great response on iTunes and from others leaving reviews of the show that are really glad to have you. So thank you for being on the show, Darren.
Hey, I'm glad to be here, and it's a wonderful community, and I can't wait to be here in future episodes.
Thanks, everybody. We appreciate your download and your support of the Improved Photography Podcast, and we will see you in episode 82.